This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Anybody can be an entrepreneur. It doesn't mean you're going to be happy as an entrepreneur. I mean, it takes a very specific kind of person who's just like relentless and almost stubbornly so to build your own business. You know that. I mean, we've talked about revenue streams when you were on my podcast. Like, so, you know, you have to be the kind of person who believes so much in what you're doing and so much in yourself that on the days when it's back-breakingly hard, you barrel through it.
Hot breath. Yo, hot breathiverse. We are back. We are back. We are back. This is your favorite host, Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot breath. Oh, we are back, hot brethren and sisters, and thanks for joining me here on Hot Breath episode number 117. Bruh. This is a good one, too. I just celebrated my 30th birthday, and I just celebrated my 8th year doing stand-up comedy, and my guest today is the perfect person to have on to talk about turning your creative endeavor and passion into an actual business. She is a straight-up creative dynamo. Too many skills to even list on here. We dive into all of them on this Hot Breath episode, so thank you for being a part of it. If you enjoy it, please let me know. At Joel Byers Comedy is my social media. You can come to joelbyerscomedy.com, reach me on there. But really, even just sharing it and tagging us at Hot Breath Pod and at Joel Byers Comedy will really, really make a difference. And just letting more people hear this, you know, getting more ears in the clears, no fears, no jeers, all cheers. Okay. Sorry. As you heard, I 8 years in comedy, not rapping. So we will shelf the rap career and continue into this podcast career. This is another one of my passions I do outside of just stand-up. And this is all about laughing and learning. Ooh, my throat gave out of me on that one. It's what, I shouldn't have had some almonds before this. They get a little fibrous in the throatus. Okay, another failed rap. Let's just get into this episode. The raps may fail, but this interview does not. So let's dive in head first. Feel free to take notes. This is packed with information. So I hope you enjoy it. And I will see you in the outro, my lovelies. So, there's only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath. With Michelle Corey.
Hot breath water.
Yeah. That's actually Fontas water.
Oh my God. Look, I'm trying to show the label.
Oh, you're showing the camera. Yeah, but that's Fontas water. That's local spring water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that good?
No, they're from the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Okay.
It's a family business.
I was like, but from the Chattahoochee?
No, that's mountain spring water right there. How does it taste?
Mmm. Mmm. I never need to drink water again. That just hydrated me forever.
Yeah, they're awesome. And they do like
this is so cool.
Custom
you have
labels
all
and
your
stuff.
Shit. That's so cool.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to be successful, you know, one way or another. One of these. Oh, you're looking at your notes. Mm. You eyeing your notes over here?
Nope.
Yeah, I got notes. I got notes.
Me too.
I see you. I saw you out here in these streets. I got to make sure people know who Michelle is. You're out here dissecting all these
frogs.
Yeah, all these creatives. It's your turn to turn the scalpel over.
Well, I'm not nervous.
Well, if you could just say your full name into the microphone.
Michelle Corey. Khouri.
Michelle Corey, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that you're here. We have a lot to discuss today.
I'm so excited.
I can tell. Or is that just you acting or you're actually...
Oh, no. I'm pretty over-enthusiastic most of the time.
Well, I appreciate it because you are someone, I think we share sensibilities as far as just loving to learn and finding people with specific expertise and then just extracting all that information
from
them.
Amen.
So
just leeching on their brains, you know?
That's what I want to do with you.
So
please do not hold back.
It's weird to be on this side of the lobotomy chair. You know what I mean?
Already. We're about 10 seconds in, maybe like a minute 10 in, and you're like, this feels weird. I don't want to, what do I do with my hands? It's a podcast. It's okay.
I didn't say that. I know what to do with my hands.
So as we're going to steer this into something that people can hear and not just have to imagine what you did with your hands, but you do have the acting background, so I guess you are just a natural performer.
Yeah. Sometimes it's unnatural how much I perform.
Is it a problem?
Oh, my God. Growing up, my mom complains about it all the time.
Really?
She was like, every family function, every time we were around people, you were like, she doesn't sound like that, but I can't do her Colombian accent. But she's like, you are always singing, oh, look at me. And I'm like, yeah, that's my nature.
Was this in Miami?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good job, researcher.
Oh, already 2 minutes and 10 seconds in. Got a good job.
You know I have an acting background.
Mm-hmm.
You know that I'm 5'10". You know my social security number. You know I grew up in Miami.
You had the doll walking business at 13?
Where did I put that?
And your mom did it for 10 years.
Oh, okay. I talked about it in a podcast. In my podcast?
Huh?
Damn it, I really should keep track of
in
what I say and where.
We're talking about it in my podcast right now.
Yeah. How did you know?
I know things.
No. You have to tell me.
Does that make you nervous that I knew?
No. I know.
Sure. Is that a secret? Is it dog walking
God,
in quotes here in Miami?
I'm very proud of that. I'm just
I didn't know if dogs were cocaine in Miami. I don't know.
I just black out when I talk to people, so.
Oh.
I don't remember where you find that out. Okay.
Oh, I don't remember where I found it out, but I just researched you and you had said that and I was like, oh, that's an interesting happening that you then said your mom took over and worked for like 10 years.
Yes.
So that's an interesting fact.
I, you know, I'm the kind of person who dabbles a lot and I'll get an urge to do something and build something. And it's only now that I'm almost 30 years old that it's like starting to come together in some sort of way. But for 3 decades, it's been like me doing random things and just following my gut. And it looks so weird on paper. But now it's all kind of resulting in something that makes sense because I have my own business, just like I started my own business, dog walking. And like I was an actor. I want to get back into acting, but my acting skills and being on stage and everything like that allows me to be a speaker. It allows me to talk to all sorts of kinds of people, allows me to be a podcast host. So it's all sort of starting to make sense, but I would say it's like starting. But still on my journey.
Do you find when you try to do too many different things, you end up, like if you try to do everything, you end up doing nothing?
Oh, 100%. One of the biggest lessons I learned last year was focus. That was like the biggest word of the year for me was like I learned to take 3 areas and to focus according to my values system. So, OK, what fulfills me personally? What makes me happy as a person and as an individual? And then everything that I do should be geared toward that. So I have like I break it out in 3 buckets. And so I say like. Anything, any kind of opportunity that comes up, it either has to make me make my career more successful, make me happier or more fulfilled person, or make my community stronger. So those are my 3 buckets. And then within those, I have like 3 focus areas for each, you know.
Oh, you break it
like
all the way down.
I need focus.
Wow.
Yeah. Or else I will. I'm like dog with a shiny bone.
Are these like actual buckets?
Yeah.
I'm being serious, though.
No.
Oh, I don't know if you had, like, physical buckets that you then compartmentalize. Because that's a big thing I struggle with, is I try to do too many things ineffectively instead of just doing one really well. So I'm just now trying to steer the ocean liner into a single direction as well.
Yes. I mean, no, they're not physical buckets. They're categories. They're areas. But it's I think it's big for a lot of creatives because I think if you're – I call myself a hyper creative and I would call you that for sure. And like, you know, our friend Bhargava, who was on one of my podcast episodes, we're all hyper creatives and it's very important for us to focus, because truly what we're doing if we don't focus is energy dispersion. So like our energy is going everywhere, so it's not powering something enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like what fuels my career success is my marketing side. So I use my experience in communications, branding, web design, and all those things to give me money. My passion as a performer, as a lover of arts and culture, that's where the Cultured Podcast comes in. So that's like my second focus. Mm. And then as just personal fulfillment, I'm still trying to find that because I'm spending so much time on my business and podcast. But uh-huh. I feel fulfilled by those things. So that's feeding me, you know, as personally fulfilling.
Well, how do you actually compartmentalize each one and make sure you're watering each plant enough?
So I think that's been a moving target for me, trying to figure it out. So I started my business in May 2017. So it's very young. And then I launched the Cultured Podcast August 2017. So the first 6 months of doing both of those has been just doing them and surviving. And that is a lot. There's a lot to be said for that. Mm-hmm. And now, actually, so in 2018, I bought a passion planner. And I'm not a person who, I don't like to set too many goals. I actually think that's counterproductive because you nail yourself down to a cross and you're just like, you must read 50 books this year. You must do 17 speaking engagements this year. And I think that that's over planning something as flexible as life. You never know where life is going to lead you. And I think I'm able to be where I am today, which is at the beginning of what I feel like is a journey to aligning to my purpose, because I ebbed and flowed. And that's real hard because you have to relinquish control. But anyway, that was a tangent. Aside from not being a huge goal setter, I do like to, I think what I need is something that allows me to track with my passion and track with my fulfillment and my big categories that I just mentioned. So I got a passion planner. So what that is it like has you write down what?
I was totally about to ask that, but I ebbed and flowed.
Nice.
And then you paused and then you went ahead and answered the question.
Come on. I wouldn't just be like, I got a passion planner. So.
You don't know. You know. You check them out on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they have like a really sexy Instagram. Because, it's definitely geared toward millennial Gen X women. Mm-hmm. But basically, you write down your passion and you start breaking it down into goals. And I kept mine pretty broad because I don't like. But it was actually helpful for me to have goals with dates attached to them, which is what it has you do for like the full year ahead. But it asks you, like, where do you see yourself in 3 months? 1 year, 3 years, and throughout your lifetime? And those are big questions, you know? So I feel like I have a broad vision for Cultured Podcast. I have a broad vision for my marketing consulting side and my speaking side. But I don't know that I had a broad vision for just like, where do I see myself like in 40 years, you know?
Yeah.
And that's cool because you can reverse engineer to this moment and start working toward it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking with goals, is almost having a northern star or like an anchor point.
That's a good way to put it.
That you can then reverse engineer and kind of game plan towards that finish line.
Yeah. What do you do?
For goals?
Yeah.
Yeah, I set goals and then not achieve them.
That's great.
But like,
see, that's what I do when I set too specific of goals.
That's what I'm just learning as you do. Like you said, you just kind of became, you quit your job. I think you were the editor at Where Atlanta and Where Nashville.
Exactly.
And you quit it and became full time. You're like, here I am. Now I'm falling out of the airplane. I got to knit a parachute before I crash on the ground. So it is like figuring out, since I'm full time comedy as well, it's like, okay, well, this isn't really a game anymore. This is like, you want it to be a job. You got to make it a job.
Oh my God. It is no fucking joke. Oh my God. And it's like, there will be one day where you get this influx of money, just an influx of dollar bills. And then the next day or the next month, you're like, am I going to make it? Like, should I start applying for jobs? And it takes an enormous amount of trust.
Yeah.
In I have faith in a greater power. And that really helps me, like, because of my spiritual beliefs, like those I kind of anchor onto those. And I think that's what they're there for, why we've created them as a species. So I use them. Mm-hmm. But I also have an enormous amount of trust in myself because I haven't failed myself yet. So I think a lot of us haven't failed ourselves yet. And if you look at your track record, you're like, oh, well, I get it done. I do it. I make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing to keep in mind, is to believe in yourself. Or, you know, another thing that really helps is to have a circle of people who believe in you more than you believe in yourself sometimes, because you need that.
Yeah. A support system is good. And like my goal last year, my big goal was to perform on Colbert. And it clearly did not happen.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen. Yeah. But it's like, it was almost like the wrong, there wasn't a why. I almost just like set a goal and yeah. didn't even have a why behind it. I didn't even, and you talk, us talking about reverse engineering, I didn't even really go through those steps as proficiently as I should have. I was kind of like, I want to do this and then I can do these few steps along the way. I wasn't consistent with it as if this is life or death. So it's not something I even, by the end of the year, I'm like, that is more of just like a vanity goal that relies on other people. Like you're saying, have faith in yourself
mm-hmm.
and trust in yourself and set goals that you can, that you're in control of. Sure, I want to get on Colbert. Okay, how many other people have to be in a line for that to happen? As mm-hmm. opposed to me being like, I want my Wednesday show to become the best in the city. Okay, I'm completely in charge of that. So I can make that happen and game plan towards it. Now, in the Colbert, like, goal, and you think of, you look at the six incremental successes that are going to build up to the big difference. You know, I was able to interview people who were on Colbert. I was able to get in contact with the booker. We are aware of each other now. So
well, that's huge.
I've submitted to her. Like, all these little steps that are now kind of just starting to get the fire even just a crackling.
Exactly. Ooh,
yeah.
That sounded cozy.
It is.
But it's such a good distinction because those giant milestones are made up of baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
And when you forget about those baby steps, it seems impossible to get there. And so I think that's a great point of why it's a balance to look, you know, 15 years ahead versus be in the now. I think it takes a balance to say, and I like the concept of reverse engineering because you're like, okay, you know, one of my major life goals is to be a novelist. Like, I see myself in 30 years, like, owning a secluded cabin in the mountains and writing there 1 to 2 weeks a month and being a novelist that churns out novels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have time for that right now. And I have one novel I've been working on, quote unquote, mm-hmm. for like 2 years. And that's way too active. But I give myself patience because I'm like, it's going to happen. I know that about myself. Since I was little, I knew I was going to be a novelist one day. And what I do in the meantime, for instance, right now, one of my clients, I'm writing her memoir. I'm ghostwriting her memoir.
Huh.
So that's actually going to be the first book I've ever written. And I'm getting paid to do it. That's a baby step. I mean, that's something. And mm-hmm. so I keep that in mind. And I think, you know, passion planner and writing down those kinds of things has helped me be aware, okay, these are the things that I want. But it takes a balance to then not drill yourself into the ground trying to be like, okay, I have to be a novelist. Yo, in the next 3 decades, I'll do it.
How much thought went into you quitting your job?
Oh, a lot of thought.
Yeah.
I wanted to do it for a while. And
what's a while?
I would say I considered it for a year to a year and a half. And that was one of those cases where I had a friend who believed in me more than I did. And she kept not pressuring me, but just being like, Michelle, if there's anybody who can build her own business and thrive as a freelancer, it's you. You know, because I've said this before, anybody can be an entrepreneur. It doesn't mean you're going to be happy as an entrepreneur. I mean, it takes a very specific kind of person who's just like relentless and almost stubbornly so to build your own business. You know that. I mean, we've talked about revenue streams when you were on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your creativity, your drive to make the best of your business and to continue advancing. I mean, having water bottles with your mark on them and sweatshirts, that's ambition. And that takes a lot of mental energy to plan and execute. So, you know, you have to be the kind of person who believes so much in what you're doing and so much in yourself that on the days when it's back-breakingly hard, you barrel through it. And it doesn't feel good, but you barrel through it. So, and people like us, we come out on the other side being like, yeah, I kicked that ass, you know, or something like that.
You may say that. Mom, I don't say that.
I think he does. He taught me that. He said, in the show, say this. That's weird, but fine.
It's the podcast tagline now, actually.
Kick that ass.
We're getting tattoos after this.
Oh, my God.
Which you do have tattoos.
I do.
From your travels, right?
I have big old tattoos, yeah. Well, I have one big old tattoo. And they mean a lot to me. Okay, I'm not going to talk about my tattoos. I love them. I name them.
Is it a personal thing?
No. Oh. I just didn't want to,
go
bore
off on
you
tattoos.
With my amazingly fascinating tattoos.
Well, your life is amazing and fascinating.
Well, thank you.
You've been to 22 countries. That's quite impressive.
24.
Oh, 24.
Or is it? That's a good question. Or it wasn't a question, but for myself. I think it's 24 or something. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Over 20.
But that was a lot from your mom. She would always, I guess, make sure you were cultured.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Culture podcast. What you do? Yeah.
.com. Sorry, I'm in marketing. I can't help it.
You're in the marketing mode, yeah.
Yeah, she is one feisty little woman, and she's Colombian. So I'm first generation American, and she's Colombian. My dad was Argentinian, but she was the world traveler. You know, she was the adventuress. And so from a young age, I mean, my first time on a airplane was when my mom moved us to Bogota, Colombia, which is where she's from and her family's from. And I was 8 months old. So, you know, it's a part of my being, like flying to other places, getting to know other cultures. And I was raised very Colombian, very much in the Colombian culture, but in the United States. Well, like my household, we spoke Spanish. It was Colombian sayings. It was Colombian food. All holidays were Colombian heritage. It was very, very Colombian. And I grew up basically part-time in Bogota. So we would go back all the time. And so that was like a second home for me. And so I, you know, we call them third culture kids. This is something that I just learned recently is like people who grow up immersed in different cultures. And it made me really weird for most of my life. You know, people didn't understand me. And even now, I don't get a lot of American sayings or customs, but I'm very American in Colombia. So
interesting.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't really have roots anywhere, but I have roots everywhere. Yeah.
Okay.
It's odd, but it's fun. I've learned to embrace it. You know, it's really fun to, because I think it allows you to understand more people, or at least to see the beauty in a lot of different kinds of ways of doing things, belief systems, just ways of life, cultures, things like that.
When you would travel, like she was big on taking you to like art exhibits and make sure you weren't just traveling and looking at the hills, but you were actually getting into the culture of it.
Exactly. Yeah. We would go, like when we went to Paris, we went to the Louvre, and that was like, oh man, I must have been 13 or 14, but it was amazing. And it was, you know, she grew up in a very different time. And I don't know how she got a taste for that or why she decided to do that with us. Because if you're thinking about stereotypically cultured person, that was my dad. You know, my dad was the one who liked to listen to tango and watch tango. And, you know, when we went to Argentina to visit him, he moved back for a short while. And when we went, you know, he would just like shed one single tear, such a romantic over a tango.
Like Destinos or something.
Yeah, exactly. Loved good wine. You know, Malbec is from Mendoza, which is where he was born. And so he was, and he loved to cook from all different cultures because he was Syrian. So it was.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like everything.
I'm telling you. I mean, my grandparents were from four different countries. And then my mom and dad were from two different countries.
Whoa.
And I was born in the U.S. So that's why I look completely nondescript.
Yeah, you kind of a blank slate. Uh-huh. Like, wow, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm an undercover Latina, is what I say.
Because
also my name is Michelle Corey, which is French and Syrian, whatever.
Undercover Latina.
Yeah.
We need to build that wall, I guess. No, I'm just kidding.
You can build it, but I'll be on the other side of like, oh, man, I'm not Latina, Hispanic. I had to find the right one.
If we build a wall, we're all trapped. That's all I'm saying. So anyway, I'm sorry. Hmm. I didn't mean to bring up a sore subject there.
Yeah. Just going to go cry now.
Well, what I love about Atlanta and what you do as well, and talking about culture, is there is a diverse culture in Atlanta. And it's a vibrant city, but also because there are so many different cultures here. And I'm a fan of Atlanta. That's why I still live here. That's why I'm a believer in Atlanta and the potential here. And I say that just from my perspective of just living here and meeting certain people. But you were actually like PR for the city.
Yeah.
You know the city. Mm-hmm. So could you provide a little context for Atlanta?
Yeah, you know, it's actually, I think it's diverse, but it's not significantly so. Like, I would definitely not consider this one of the most diverse cities in the U.S., especially coming from Miami, and I frequent New York City. And so, and I lived in L.A. for a short while. So I think that there's some diversity here, but it's very segmented. It's very separated, you know?
Yeah.
The diversity that exists is, you know, you find the Latinos in Norcross or, you know, in Gwinnett County. You find the Indian population in Decatur. You find I don't even know if there's a Caribbean population. I'm now thinking about Miami. But, and then even black and white are very separated still here. And that freaks me out. It's weird because, I mean, even just the high school I went to, most of us were either first generation Americans or immigrants from all over. You know, two of my best friends were Ukrainian, Russian. My other friends were Bahamian, Jamaican. There was other Eastern European. I mean, white was the minority in my school, but it didn't matter, you know? So I think Atlanta has a far way to go when it comes to diversity, but I also just don't think that's one of its main issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun doing PR for the city because, you know, I moved here 5 years ago, and right when I started doing PR, I was the PR manager at the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau, and it was a great place to work. I really have fond memories about working there, but it was a time when the Center for Civil and Human Rights was under construction. The College Football Hall of Fame was under construction. The streetcar had just been announced to start implementation on it. There was a lot going on, a lot, so much development. And for me, that was really exciting because I didn't come into it knowing context, the political context. But now I understand that maybe I'm diving in too deep, but this city hasn't really gotten a handle on growing responsibly and what that means and embracing its residents. It really doesn't do a good job of fully embracing its residents and the talent that resides here. This is one of the most talented cities I've ever lived in.
Why do you say that?
Because there are so many artists and, you know, business people. There's a lot of intelligence here. That's one way that this city blows Miami out of the water.
Interesting.
Miami's not a smart city. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm generalizing, obviously, but also based on my own experience, two disclaimers. But Atlanta is extremely intelligent. There's, you know, you have Georgia Tech here. You've got Emory here. You've got GSU here. There's a lot of education going on in the city, and there's a lot of young people who crave more education, and there's a lot of artists who are incredibly hardworking and talented, writers, comedians, performers of all kinds. We've got some of the best actors, I would say, on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're feeding New York, we're feeding Broadway, and that's pretty amazing. So from an arts and culture perspective, I'm super proud to live in this city, and I'm so excited that I get to have the podcast that I have in this city, you know? But I don't think that the actual local government does a good job of recognizing that and nurturing it.
Why?
Because all the money goes to big, shiny things.
Oh, like stadiums. Yeah. Right next to scary places. Yeah, stadiums right next to... We're gentrifying stadiums.
Yes.
That's how far gentrification has gone.
Stadiums, new stadiums, next to stadiums that are not old.
Yeah.
And then imploding those stadiums. And then, you know... Summerhill, for instance, is this beautiful community that has this deep-rooted history right next to Grant Park. It's the community that partially envelopes Turner Field. And for some bizarre reason, this community right around a major stadium that had our MLB team that drew in hundreds of thousands of people has no funding, has no revitalization efforts until recently. And that, to me, is crazy. You know, so I think we spend a lot of time, our local government spends a lot of time trying to attract outside eyes when what makes a community really, really strong is nurturing the people that exist within it.
Mm.
They're your best advocates. They're the ones who, I mean, there's so many hardworking people here getting into local policy work or local government work, stuff that I don't understand. So thank God for them.
Yeah.
You know, and pushing to make our community stronger. And there's just not, there's such an uphill battle here to make good things even better.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I know you know, like, the history of Atlanta, and I'm just coming at it from a comedian, like, well, we got a great comedy scene here, and then I know there's some music and some art, and we got stadiums. It's got to be a cool place. And you're like, well, you know, it's a shiny place.
Yeah, I just read recently someone say Atlanta is like the quintessential South in that it puts on a good face for the outside and then drops.
That's so perfect.
Right?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, everything's good here. And then, like, our bridges catch fire. Your car gets swallowed by a pothole every day.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's real. It's a real special place. I mean, listen, every city has its problems. But it breaks my heart mostly to see all of these people go unnoticed and unnurtured. You know, who are the pillars of history in this community, like people who have lived for decades in one neighborhood being pushed aside because of big, shiny stadium, you know, X marks the spot. And so, yeah, I think there's a long way to go there.
It sounds like you want to become like an influential figure in that space.
Is
that,
no.
No, you don't want to you don't want to be like an activist. You just are observing.
No, I like to observate.
Observating.
I do. That's one of my pastimes is observating. Whenever possibly, you know.
When I'm alone, I'll observate. I'm sorry.
That's good.
I'm sorry.
That's real good.
I'm a comedian, you know. Okay, I didn't know if that was on your to-do list, because you are very informed, and it seems like you do see where, like, the pressure points are. So I didn't know if you were trying to shine light on that more.
I would say from a bird's eye view, and I definitely want to shine light on that whenever possible, but more as an auxiliary figure, like as somebody who's like, you know, there's a lot of people who know more, way more than me and who do a better job at helping this situation. But I want, yeah, so auxiliary, just helping.
So I guess what you're trying to do is with your branding company is actually empower these people you're saying are being overlooked.
Yeah, kind of. I like to empower businesses that I believe in. And so I don't actually have a firm structure to my marketing consulting business. So, like, I will take on any kind of project that I think I can do well and that I believe in the client. So, for instance, I'm writing a memoir for a client, and then I'm ghostwriting for freeingenergy.com, which is Bill Nussie's endeavor. He's amazing, and he's writing a book about local energy and, like, microgrids. It's so interesting, and I know nothing about it, and I'm learning as I write each piece a tremendous amount. So that's really interesting. And then I have a choreographer client who I do PR for. And then I work with an online school, an online university, and I help pitch them to podcasts and guest blog, or to do guest blogging. So I do a little bit of everything.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I work with Bhargava at Chill Media, and I help more like a higher level strategic and brand development role. So content development and, branding design and identity development and things like that.
How are you able to drum up such a diverse portfolio? Are you out there, like, reaching out? Or is this more of a network you've just been building over the years?
No, you know, I haven't had to do any business development.
Okay.
And I think it was really my strategy going out on my own was to shout from the rooftops to my frontline advocates. And who are those? That's everyone on social media that you're connected to. Like, use them. Like, not use them. Use people. No, but truly communicate what you're doing. Be communicative. Be open. Hey, I'm quitting my job and I'm starting this business and I built my own website and I built a brand and I just started like blasting it out there. And I think people don't realize that when you do a good job at what you do, people notice. And the second you open the door for them, they're going to walk through. And so be open to it. And I had a couple nightmarish experiences in my first 6 months. And, you know, I lost a friend in my first 6 months.
Oh.
And because we worked together and that was really sad. But those are lessons learned. And so you just got to keep going. And if you do a really good job, your client will refer you. They will refer you. And so that's it's been a system of referrals for me that I really hope continues. But I'm always ready to do business development if I need to and to start reaching out.
What about compartmentalizing stress and anxiety? It seems like you're spinning a lot of plates. And I know with your job at Wear Atlanta, stress became almost like the deciding factor in getting out of that environment. So how do you find yourself, how do you maybe, a lot of people deal with stress on a daily basis, anxiety on a daily basis, waking up in the middle of the night with panic attacks. How have you learned to deal with that and maybe even dampen that?
That's a great question. And honestly, at where it was, the anxiety was fueled by the fact that I was working for a company that I didn't feel cared at all about me as a human being and was asking the world of me with absolutely no regard for capacity or limit, you know? And so I do way better working for myself, way better, because I put the stresses on myself. I know how much I can handle. I am a firm believer in limits. I mean, I have the capacity to work a whole lot, so I've had to learn boundaries with myself and scale back and say, okay, past 7:30 p.m., I'm not going to be working, which, I mean, like, I'm still working on that. I'm still working on that. But I have imposed some limits. And so I'll have anxious weeks, maybe where a bunch of deadlines pile up. And so I'll learn, okay, let's stagger the deadlines and make sure that doesn't happen again. But I've actually been, you know, stressed insofar as I have a busy workload, and that's actually a blessing.
True.
So honestly, my daily practice of meditation and gratitude are huge. Meditation actually chemically alters your brain and stabilizes your mood in tremendous ways. It's also a way of getting to know yourself better and to have an open line of communication with yourself. And that's super important because sometimes when we don't listen, we get really lost in what other people or society wants us to do. And then we're miserable and we don't know why. I'm speaking from experience.
So you'll do that in the morning?
Well, I'll do it whenever I can. Usually I like to do it at night because I mean, I've gotten to a point with my meditative practice that I can meditate for like 40 plus minutes.
Wow. Okay.
And so I'll segue that into sleep.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I won't fall asleep.
You do it laying down or you like sitting?
I like laying down.
Okay.
But there are a couple times, like if I'm feeling especially anxious, I'll sit at my desk and I'll do a 15-minute meditation sitting there. And that will wipe my mind clear and I'll just kind of like come out of it a new person. So that helps a lot. And then the practice of gratitude is just understanding that even when you have issues, most of them are rooted in privilege or in blessings, you know?
Wow.
So like, oh my God, I have so many deadlines. That means that I have so many clients.
Right.
That means that I'm getting paid, that I can pay my rent.
Mm-hmm.
Barely in Atlanta. That's another issue. But
that takes – the gratitude actually takes the action of stepping back and actually writing down what you're grateful for?
Not necessarily.
Just being mindful of it?
Yeah. Just stating it. Just being mindful, you mm-hmm. know? I think it depends on who you are. So if it really helps for you to write things out, do it. That takes knowing yourself, right?
Right.
So there's like a cycle there where the more you know yourself, the more you're able to implement strategies that work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Some people setting goals, like, all through their life really, really helps. And it keeps them on track. And, you know, actually that works really well for competitive people because they compete with themselves. I'm not competitive at all, to a fault. I'm just not. So I'm like, ah, whatever.
Right.
It's fine.
How do you deal with creative block? How do you kind of overcome that barrier? Because you do, I mean, like we said, acting, you do woodworking.
Used
poetry.
To.
Poetry. Oh, you
it.
Used to do
I miss it,
woodworking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You even like would work on your own house.
Yeah, I like, love DIY projects. Like,
handy.
You know, backsplash, yeah.
Yeah, but that was back in the marriage days. We don't want to go to those dark, we call those the dark ages.
Dark ages.
That was her blue period, if you're an art fan. That was.
Oh, I love what you did there.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I just wanted to touch on that we know.
I don't hide anything.
That was a dark time.
Actually, it wasn't that dark. The darkest part about being married was the fact that I didn't know myself at all. And so I had no idea what I wanted, you know? And so all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm not happy in this. Why am I not happy? He's a wonderful man. It was because I wasn't listening to myself. I didn't know myself.
You were in college, right?
No.
Oh.
I met him in the middle of college. And then I was with him from 19 to 26. So there was like
wow.
a whole period of blackout on my own personal growth, you know?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was fairly recently.
Yeah, that was a few years ago that we got divorced.
Oh.
Yeah.
For the better?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he found somebody way better for him. Mm-hmm. They've been together for years. I'm, like, very happy for him. And I've been single this whole time in the most cathartic way. Like,
yeah.
It's been so cathartic and super difficult and... Even just the mere fact of starting my own business, because I started a business while I was with him, and he was an incredibly supportive person and partner and a safety net. And so, you know, I started this business that I sort of thought I should have had. It was a PR consulting business, and I don't particularly love PR, especially because of how clients perceive PR. So it's like a real difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I only take on clients that I... like fangirl over now, but my whole practice was built on PR. I wasn't very passionate. I was busting ass to build the business, but knowing I had a backup and him and all this stuff. And now going out on my own, completely by myself, no safety nets.
Yeah.
Scariest, but most empowering thing I've ever done, you know? And so the past 3 years have really been about self-discovery, transformation, and literally, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to fall in love now. And she was like, she was like, what did you say? What? I was like, yeah, I think I'm ready. Even my mom was like, ¿qué? Oh, my God. I know.
¿Qué lástima?
No, she's like, have babies. I'm like, I'm good.
Oh, well, I touched on it a second ago, and I only asked because I've been going through kind of a slump lately creatively.
Mm.
And like we talked about on your podcast, culturepodcast.com. Boom. That, you know, as I do this Write 10 Club in the mornings and I'll write every day, I've haven't been really getting traction. Like I'll write and then go to shows. Nothing has just been, yes, I found something else. It's just been just like a lot of glancing over, which I know is part of the process. And who knows, tomorrow, maybe tonight at a show, I'll have a breakthrough.
Yeah.
But have you had any experience with like block or ways to overcome that? Or
you know what I might suggest for you? I actually love doing this myself and I don't do it as much as I should because it takes time. But go to the High Museum or any art museum near you.
Mm.
And for you, it would be interesting for you to like maybe go to the contemporary wing or maybe the folk art wing and start writing jokes about different paintings.
Hmm.
You know, just to get yourself out of the typical structure. Oh, I like doing that. I like writing short stories about paintings, and I especially abstract ones or not, whatever painting. I'll walk around, and if a painting strikes my fancy, I'm like, oh, Let me write a short story about it. And it's a really interesting way of getting you out of the typical way of seeing life or, you know, I think we get into some grooves of like, I find inspiration in this. And so that is what I will do all
right,
the time.
Right.
And so that might be an interesting exercise. Or what also could be really fun for you, I don't do this, but I don't know, it just came into my mind, is if you go to like the Beltline or Piedmont Park and make up stories about people, like their lives, and write jokes about them. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I guess what I'm getting at is get yourself outside of your norm. Like, shake it off by forcibly shaking yourself into a discomfort zone.
I like that.
You know?
That makes perfect sense.
Because it's so hard. I mean, sometimes I get writer's block, and if I'm on deadline, the only way to do it is to just start writing. And it's so painful.
Yeah, it's almost like turning the gears and they're all rusty.
Yeah. And I mean, I say this all the time. I hate what I write right after I write it. And so if I sleep on it and go back to it the next day, I'll be like, oh, this wasn't so bad, you know? Or I'll send it to a client being like, oh, my God, he's going to hate it.
Yeah.
And he comes back. He's like, you nailed it. I'm like, I'll believe you. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, but like writing is a muscle and editing is also a muscle. They're almost like two different skill sets you have to hone in on.
Completely different.
And editing, what kind of tips do you have on editing?
So editing words, because I edit my own podcast and then my executive producer puts finishing touches on it. But it's actually funny because I have experience editing words and now editing audio is such a different world. But both of them are about cohesion and concise storytelling. So with words, it's a skill that you just you study. So like, I would say for people trying to edit their own work, keep things tight. So keep sentences as tight and short as possible. It's really good to slash, like Freddy Krueger all over that thing. Because it's flow is tremendously important. And you can have some really interesting flow and connections between different sentences if you keep them short. You know, and so I think when people try to squeeze too much into one sentence when they could easily parse that up, that's a big thing. But also, like, I don't know how to give advice because it's a lot about knowing the rules of grammar and knowing how words can play off of each other and interact in interesting ways. And so I think the relationship between a writer and an editor is really amazing because it's a collaboration. You know, it's kind of like it's kind of like a painter and a gallery owner, you know, where it's like, I don't know, that's probably not a good metaphor. And I love me some metaphors, but it's the way that I work with my client where I ghostwrite his blog posts because I give him a foundation and then he goes in and he's like, wow, I would have never thought of writing this in this way. But let me inject this knowledge that I have. Let me inject this knowledge that I have in this. And so he like beefs it up and makes it this incredible source of expertise that I could have never done because I don't have that expertise.
Right.
Then I go in and copy edit it. And the result is something that neither one of us individually could have ever done alone, you know?
But it can be hard to kill those babies and, like, you're talking about slash everything, but you can get romantic about these ideas. But this is too profound to leave out. But is it almost like knowing what you're trying to get across, like the message, like the premise, the elevator pitch, always keeping that in mind when you're editing?
Yeah, maybe, like, what's a good exercise is to write the entire point of the piece in one sentence. So write in one sentence, not a run-on sentence, what you're trying to convey. And if you can do it in one sentence, I promise you can slash that one like very critical sentence, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that that's a really good exercise, but also disassociating from it. Like that voice that's like, but this is so important is kind of your ego. You know, and we all have that little stupid little chirpy ego. But if you relinquish your ego, then you're able to look at it from an objective point of view and slash, they're just words. They're just words, you know?
It's the ego, yeah.
It's the ego.
Nobody cares anyway.
I know. No one's going to read it.
Nobody's going to retweet this.
Oh, that makes me sad. I'm a writer. No one's going to read it. No one reads words anymore. That's why I have a podcast.
Yeah, because you can just say them.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that's why I have a podcast. It's the new wave.
Yeah, hot breath.
So I'm glad you did this. This was awesome.
This was so much fun. Thank you.
Thanks for being on this. You know, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Joel Byers, I'm sorry for being late earlier. That was my public apology.
Well, I appreciate that. It was only 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That's all. You know, it's fine. You know, it's fine. Don't worry
about it. I wish you hadn't said how late I was.
It's totally good. You know, I'm an evil white dude. I can wait. I've had my turn long enough.
Now so it's weird because that's exactly why I was late.
Just because, Joel will be fine. He has nothing to do.
Yeah.
So, well, I appreciate you apologizing. It's totally cool, though. I played it cool, like, all right, let's just do this. But yeah. I really didn't. I'm totally cool. I was brainstorming with Cooper in there.
Cooper, the producer of this episode. Sup. He's the best.
So we were like, we're actually like brainstorming some cool ideas because we're at Listen Up and they're audio gurus in here.
Oh, yeah.
So discussing just the future of audio is very intriguing to me right now and just looking for different angles into this world. Like we're talking about different streams and things. I think audio, there's so many different
voice
streams.
Voice work? I would love to do voice work. Voice work, audiobook narration, there's so much.
I agree with that completely. Can we get in on this, Cooper? Cooper, can you hire us for audio?
Thank you. He said yes.
Two thumbs up.
Great.
Cool. So we're not going to do any more podcasts. This will be my last podcast. I'm going to start reading Dr. Seuss books.
I'm going to keep doing the Cultured Podcasts. culturedpodcast.com.
It's not a bad idea to actually do Dr. Seuss audiobooks.
Oh my God. Can we try?
Okay.
Red fish.
Blue fish.
One fish.
Two fish.
Yay.
Yay. I don't know if Pee Wee Herman was that voice. That was my childhood.
Or should I do like a little girl like, one fish.
Two fish.
I'm really sucking at this. Red fish.
Two fish.
Blue fish.
One fish. One fish. One fish. One fish. Two fish.
Oh, there you go.
Three fish. Blue fish.
That's the one.
Is that the voice?
That's the one.
Listen up. This is my audition. This is my audition for whatever you guys, whatever book or.
That wasn't
too bad there. Hey, now.
Then again, I'm drawn to creepy things, so maybe.
I don't know.
But maybe I'm a bad focus group member.
Yeah, you got into it. That's my demo. Latino women that are late. I'm just kidding. No, well.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. You know, good things come to those who wait, and this was good. So
this was good.
It was so good. Well, let the people know. You know, all your jazzercise. This is your time to do your plugging.
To shine. All right. You can find me on Instagram at Michelle Corey. That's KHOURI. And you can find me on Instagram as Cultured Pod. It's really fun. You can also join the newsletter because I give little tidbits, teasers, and snippets. And it's really fun and quick. And you can find me on Twitter as Michelle Corey or Cultured Pod. Et cetera, et cetera. Basically, you can find me everywhere as Michelle Corey and Cultured Pod. MichelleCorey.com, CulturedPodcast.com.
Michelle Corey, thank you for being on Hot Breath.
Thank you.
Boom. Nice.
Oh, man, that was so fun.
We did it. We had cheer. Hot Breath. There it is, Hot Breathiverse. Thanks for hanging out with me. I gotta say, my favorite part of this was really hearing about her transition from doing a job where she didn't feel appreciated and wasn't really that passionate into really creating her own success and starting her own business. I think there are so many people out there that really do struggle with that same barrier of I have this passion, but I have this job as well. And finding a way to make that transition happen is something I hope Michelle helped you with today. There are so many other things in this episode. What was your favorite part? I would really love to hear what you learned in here and what you can then
apply to yourself. You know, that's really what this is all about, is just helping people and really helping myself as well learn from people with a certain expertise I can then benefit from. So thank you for listening. If you learned from this, please, please, please share it with somebody that you think could value it. If you're on an iPhone, there's a simple share button in your iTunes there, in your podcast. You can share it to Facebook, tag someone on Instagram, all that jazzercise. It really does make a difference. And you can tell by listening to this, we're doing a quality podcast here. So it's all about just sharing that quality with others, especially with podcasts. It can get lost in the sauce of everybody doing one. But I got to say, I'm proud of Hot Breath. Michelle's Cultured Podcast is also a winner. I was interviewed on hers as well, so you can go check that out. But it's all about interacting and really building the Hot Breathiverse, as we call it. So like I mentioned in the intro, I also do stand-up. If you want to see that, if you're curious, every single Wednesday, I am hosting a live comedy show at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia. It's been going on for about 6.5 years now. I would love to see you there. It's a free show. Atlanta's comedy scene is legitimately one of, if not the top in the country right now. So you're coming out to the show for free, seeing, I guarantee, some of the future stars of comedy, legitimately. So if you don't want to support my comedy, you know, that's fine. Don't mind me. There's still over 100 Hot Breath episodes here you can listen to, but it's all about having fun, as we say. So thank you for hanging out. Thank you to my engineer, Amon Garner, for keeping all the audio up and at him. If you need any audio help, he's the man, Amon Garner, on Facebook. Of course, we do have a Patreon page here as well, if you'd like to maybe help out the podcast there and helping, as we talk about, in making your passions a job. You going over to Patreon can really help in supporting the podcast and helping us up the quality even more here. So that's patreon.com/hotbreathpod. And of course, my wife is the final thank you of every Hot Breath episode we do here. She made the theme song, so now I am contractually obligated to thank her every single episode for 117 now. So thank you, Aaron Byers. Check it off the list. Now you can check off listening to this off the list. And we do these every Monday. So until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath.
This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.